Today's episode contains depictions of violence and murder against Indigenous people. We ask that you use your best judgment before listening. If you're an Indigenous person, please consider a form of self-care after listening. Thank you.
If you Google Donald Wayne Davis, you won't find a single article about him. Only three were written, and they're in a box somewhere in a library in Rockingham in a closet. The public can't even access them. And even if you read those articles, they wouldn't tell you the story we're about to tell you. This is one of the most disturbing stories we've ever covered. And after I got off the phone with Donald's sister, I walked out of the room and I fell to my knees and I wept. This is the story of the murder of Donald Wayne Davis.
Lost a life.
Wayne Davis was a 20-year-old Lumbee man just weeks away from his 21st birthday living in Hamlet, North Carolina, right outside of Robeson County in Richmond County in 2001. He had a lot of family in Robeson County, including his sister, Danielle Davis, who lived in Prospect at the time, but his mama's house was in Hamlet, North Carolina.
And wherever mama's house is home.
I know, that's right. And Donald was also a country boy. I mean, he loved riding four-wheelers and spending time with his dogs. He had a few cars, including a Tahoe with rims and a little S10 truck.
That's a Lumbee boy's rite of passage right there. You gotta have the S10 as your first truck, especially back then.
And we're going to give Dakota, you know, a break on this since his first truck was a Tacoma, since he's our editor. But anyway, his sister said he loved to tinker on his cars and, you know, work on them. And he also loved fishing and spending time with his family, especially his nieces and nephew. And he also did construction work and he even danced in powwows.
Danielle also said that he was very caring and helpful and free-hearted, and he was very well known in the community, too. Another thing he was well known for was being very handsome, and he wasn't just like regular handsome, y'all. He was actually so handsome that he had four different modeling contracts. About 2 weeks before he was killed, he had to be in Atlanta for a few days while he was working on getting a modeling gig there. His sister, Danielle, said that he came back home with the biggest grin on his face, y'all, and that he told her he had signed with Coca-Cola, Nautica, Tommy Hilfiger, and another company.
Honey, if you just threw in Harley Davidson, he would have had, you know, every Lumbee's favorite brand and, you know, their favorite brands in 2001.
Facts. Also, for those of y'all who haven't seen his photo yet, Donald was tan-skinned with long brown hair down his back, and he had a goatee and a big pearly white smile.
She's trying to tell y'all he was fine.
Fine.
So a few days after he'd gotten back from Atlanta, him and his family were all spending time together on Sunday, and Donald was outside tinkering on his cars. He told Danielle that a guy with a drug problem who was working with the police at the time, you know, probably as an informant, came up to him trying to buy drugs.
Donald says, "Man, gone from here, nobody don't sell no drugs here." And then the guy leaves and they see him get into the car of a narcotics agent who works for the police. And the narcotics agent pulls up to Donald and says, "I'ma get you."
So after he gets done telling Danielle this, she starts kind of getting scared and just has a really bad dream about him. And she wanted to call and tell him, you know, don't go anywhere, but she didn't because she didn't want to scare him.
And I do think we should give y'all some context about Richmond County, according to Danielle. I'm not that familiar with the area at all, but this is what Danielle said.
It is very racist here. It's like, if you're not white, then, if you're not white, they put you in a category, and that category, they say that you're the N-word.
Right.
So you're either white or you're the N-word.
And also, the racial makeup of Hamlet, North Carolina is about 50% white, 45% black, and 2% Native American.
So on that Tuesday, October 16th, right after the incident that he had with the guy asking for drugs, Danielle gets a call at her house. And her son said it was her niece saying that the police had stopped Donald Wayne. But apparently her niece, who was telling this, had recently developed a really bad habit of fibbing, or as Lumbies like to say, telling stories. And so Danielle told her son to just hang up the phone because she thought that the little girl was pranking them.
But then she said something didn't really sit right with her, and she sat there for a few minutes before deciding to call her mama. But before she could actually pick up the phone, her mama was calling her, saying that it was true, that the laws had stopped Donald Wayne, and she said they had him handcuffed and shackled outside of the car, and that she was going to go see what was going on.
And at this time, Donald had been pulled over by the police during a traffic stop off of Highway 381 in Hamlet near an auction place. And it was about 3 minutes or so from his mama's house, so she got there very fast. And this is what she saw.
So my mama rode on up there at this time. So when my mama got there, she pulled across the street. There's an auction there across the street where they had to stop. So my mama was sitting there. She was just watching. She said my little brother was in the back seat. She said, but he was kind of like leaned over. She didn't really think much about it. You know, she was just trying to see what's going on. So one of the cops approached her, and then another cop come over. She said by this time, three cops had going to come over at one time, and they was like, you can't sit here during a routine traffic stop. Is there something we can help you with or something? And my mama said, well, that's my son, and I've had people stop by and tell me that y'all had him stopped. She said, so with everything going on, she said, I wanted to come up here, make sure everything was okay. He was like, yeah, everything's fine, but you can't sit here and watch a traffic stop. You got to leave. So my mama said, well, I've never heard of that. She was like, but okay. So they made her leave. She went home.
So her mama goes back home, and people, you know, just steady keep coming by telling her Donald Wayne was arrested. So she decides to go back out there, and by that time, the police are gone with Donald, but his car is still there. And when she gets in it, it's totally ransacked. Danielle said Donald always had a big cup of sweet tea with him, and that was poured all over the seats, and, you know, there were just papers strewn everywhere, and his glasses were in the car too, and he always wore his glasses. So then his mama decides to actually just take the car back to her house.
She starts calling the magistrate's office whenever she gets home to find out where Donald Wayne is and how to bail him out. The magistrate tells her his tag has not been called in and they don't know why he was stopped. She calls again a little bit later and they tell her the same thing. And then she calls for a third time and this is what happens.
So they said, ma'am, I guess they were getting aggravated with her. So they was like, ma'am, maybe you need to try your local hospital. We don't have your son. Your son hasn't been, his tag hasn't been called in like we told you. Try a local hospital. So my mama called me and she told me that. And I was like, mama, something's not right. She said, well, I'm going to find my youngin'.
You know, I can't even imagine how stressed she probably was and just confused. Also, she had been diagnosed with breast cancer in 1999, so her health wasn't exactly in the best condition during this time.
Danielle decides to leave Prospect to drive to Hamlet to help her mama figure out what in God's name is going on. And before she even gets in town, her husband calls her and tells her to go to the hospital, and so she does. And when she arrives, there are black SUVs everywhere that she could tell were police vehicles. And she later found out that these were some sort of police vehicles from Raleigh, Fayetteville, and Charlotte, even though the family had not even been alerted that anything had happened to Donald Wayne.
She sees her family members outside, including her stepsister, who's crying. And, you know, someone says, we feel like he's dead, but no one has said anything, and, you know, or that he's dead for sure, and the family wasn't allowed to see him, and no one would give her any information.
Danielle finally walks in the hospital and sees her mama and brother, and they are just waiting to see Donald, but we're told they can't see him now. Danielle gets upset and says this is not right, and so they finally allow the family to go in two at a time. And this is what happens when Danielle walks in and sees Donald laying in the hospital bed.
So there was my brother. So I walk up to the bed, and I'm rubbing his hair and trying to wipe his shirt and stuff off. And I'm like, why has he got all this dirt and stuff all over me? He had pine straw and dirt all over his socks and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, nobody's still not telling us anything. Mm-hmm. So my mom's over here on the floor because when she went to lean down and she picked my brother up, where she was crying and stuff, he had so much pepper spray on him that it got in her eyes and stuff. So she kind of like tripped a little bit. She ended up on the floor, so she just sat there. And I'm like, why aren't y'all helping my mama? So then there again, I focused back on my brother, because it was like, I'm in a dream at this point. So I see that he's got an IV and he's catheter. So I'm like, okay, maybe they just got him sedated. So like I said, I'm over there rubbing his hair and stuff. Well, you know how some people sleep with their eyes cracked open a little bit or something?
Yeah.
But that's how my brother's eyes was. And I was like, he don't sleep like this. Still been in there a good 10 minutes at this point. Nobody still told us anything. So I'm sitting and I'm checking him out and stuff. In my mind, I'm still thinking, maybe they got him sedated, he's asleep or whatever, you know. So, Salt told me to pick his hand up. Girl, Brittany, when I picked his hand up, his whole arm come up. And that's when it hit me. Daniel, he's gone.
Also, the entire time they were at the hospital, none of the nurses or doctors ever spoke to them, except twice. You know, the only thing they said was that only two people could go in at a time to be with Donald and just be careful with his IV and catheter. They were never told he was dead or that they had tried to save him or anything.
So they ended up leaving the hospital sometime after, just in total shock. No police spoke to them about what happened. As soon as they got home, Danielle starts emailing lawyers. The lawyers tell her to contact the local NAACP, which she tries to do, but the person over the chapter in the county is also the doctor who ended up calling the time of death on her brother. Apparently, the hospital had called him that Tuesday evening when Donald was dead in the hospital and asked him to come in and call a time of death, and he told them that he wasn't getting out of bed for that.
Which is kind of strange that they would even call him in the first place, right? Like, why not ask another doctor on staff? That doesn't seem normal at all.
I really don't understand, but when Danielle talked to him, he told her the NAACP could not help her and she'd have to find a native organization to help her. But she later found out that that was not true at all when she saw the NAACP helping the family of Matthew Oxendine, who was killed by the police in Robeson County a few years ago. Also, I worked for the NAACP for a summer a few years ago, and we worked with all races of people during that summer, and we especially did a lot of work for the Latinx community who were being underpaid and overworked at a chicken plant nearby. I even protested at the chicken plant.
That's a sight I'd like to see, you at a chicken plant.
Honey, that's a sight I'd like to unsee and a smell I'd like to unsmell.
You can never unsmell the smell of a chicken plant. I'm telling y'all, if y'all never been by one or live near one, God, it's awful. So the next day after Donald was killed, which is a Wednesday, the modeling agency keeps calling the house because remember, Donald was actually supposed to be in Atlanta to do some modeling work and the family has to tell him that he's dead. And you know, they're shocked themselves. And so the same day, the family's informed that Donald's body has been sent off to Chapel Hill to the medical examiner's office.
The family calls the medical examiner to find out exactly how long the autopsy report will take. And this is what happens.
My mama asked how long would it take for my brother's body to get back and stuff like that. And so he told my mama, he said, well, he said, as soon as we get with the FBI and the Richmond County Police Department, he said, and we get our story together, he said, they'll release your son's body.
And getting the story together.
Yes, that's what he said. And I looked at my mama and I made a face and she talked to him for a few more minutes. I said, did he actually really just say when they got their story together? She was like, yeah, that's exactly what he said.
But y'all, things are about to get so much worse. That same day, now remember, this is one day after Donald died, a UPS truck pulls up in the family's yard at about 5 p.m. And what was he delivering to the family, you might ask? The autopsy report.
Oh, that's just unbelievable. How could they possibly get the results that fast?
Well, not only that, honey. The report was only one page. And the results of the report are, well, I'll let y'all hear them from Danielle directly.
They said that the cause of death had determined to be he had heart disease, a seizure, and something with the brain is what they tried to. Yeah.
Y'all, I'm in shock. It's just heart disease.
And I asked her, too, if he was ever sickly or anything, and she said no, and that he worked out twice a day. And also remember, too, that he was just 20 years old at the time.
And y'all, this isn't over. The next day, so that's Thursday, his body gets returned to the family, and Danielle decides to go to the funeral home to view his body after the funeral home director called her. He told Danielle that Donald had something sticky in his hair that he couldn't get out, and that he'd washed Donald's hair 3 times, and he thought maybe it was something like tree sap.
So Danielle walks into the funeral home, and this is what happens next when she sees her brother's body.
I had to come up here to see with my own eyes what they done to you. So, he had 2 black eyes. When they had used so much pepper spray on him, it burnt some of his eyelashes off and some of his mustache, because when we was at the hospital, you know how babies, when they have colds and just say they sleep at night and they wake up, sometimes snot might be like got their whole nostril, whole clothes.
Yeah.
Well, that's how much pepper spray was in his nose. Like, if he would have been alive, he would have had to probably took a warm rag to get it out, because it was matted in his nostrils.
Oh my God.
The pepper spray. He had taser marks. He had dog bites. His back looked like they had took the baton and just beat him in his back, because it was like straight lines all on his back. There was a hole in his back big enough you could have stuck your thumb in it. His collarbone was broke. His hip bone was broke. And girl, when I got to his privacy, my heart just, it hurt even worse, because the meat out of his, from his groin area was gone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the meat was gone. Like, where, okay, let me see how I can say it. You know, like, you have your inner thigh, yeah, and then, you know, like, a man has their testicles. So, that little bit of space between your leg before you get to your privacy, like, all the meat was gone from there in his testicles. The meat was gone.
Oh, my God.
Like, it looked like carpet burn or something.
Oh, my God.
And then, his knees were bruised and cut. His ankle was broke. 2 of his toes were broke.
Black eyes, broke bones, taser marks, bruises, and they said he died of heart disease and a seizure. Y'all, that makes me so angry.
It's absolutely infuriating, and I just kind of want to take a moment for folks to process what they just heard. Another thing that Danielle noticed was in reference to his clothes. So like a lot of men, Donald wore an undershirt under his button-up. And he had on a button-up that day with a white shirt underneath. Well, his button-up shirt was perfectly clean and had no pepper spray on it at all. But his undershirt and boxers were filthy with straw and dirt and pepper spray.
So it seems like he must have been, you know, stripped down and beaten.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me.
Also, his mama sealed his clothes in a plastic bag, and you can still smell the pepper spray 20 years later.
And speaking of that pepper spray, so after all of this, Danielle and the family are obviously even more angry and confused about what happened to Donald. So they finally get one of the police officers who was on the scene to answer some questions. She finds out that Donald was stopped during some sort of routine traffic stop because he didn't have on his seatbelt. The police officer she spoke to said police who had stopped him called him and asked him to come and bring his police dog. So he did, and he ran the dog through Donald's Tahoe. And he said this young man doesn't have anything, meaning he doesn't have any drugs. And the police told him to run the dog again. And so he did, and he said he doesn't have anything, it's time for y'all to let him go. And then they asked him to run the dog a third time, and he said no, and he left.
He said when he left, Donald was alive, and he went to the police station, which was only 3 miles away and about a 5-minute drive. And when he walked into the police department, they said, that young man they stopped is dead.
So Donald didn't have any drugs on him, and even if he did, he didn't deserve to be pepper sprayed and beaten to death. We also found out that they used 3 cans of pepper spray on him.
And by then, Donald's mama starts wondering about, you know, when she went to go see about him at the traffic stop and he was in the back of the police car slumped over, if he was already dead at that point.
So the family gets a phone call to meet at the Hamlet Police Department with the FBI. And Danielle compiles a list of questions, and the family is very eager to get some answers about how a seatbelt violation ended in Donald's body being brutalized and ended up being killed. Danielle said she asked what happened and the cops were extremely evasive and they were just not answering the questions. The only thing they would say is that they struck Donald once on his hip, but when the family asked them why they hit him, they couldn't answer. So Danielle just crumpled up her paper with questions on it and the family prepared to leave with no answers.
Before they left, Donald's mama asked for the rest of his belongings and they gave her his wallet, but his license wasn't in there. And she asked for it and they told her she can't have it because it was actually state's property. And she knew that day he was about to go buy a car from someone that cost $2,400 and he had that money on him, but when she looked in his wallet, there was only $200.
Before the funeral director came to meet with the family and he told them that they could ask him anything. And they began asking different questions and the director's eyes started filling with tears. This is one of the things that he told them.
He said when an autopsy is performed, he said, you know, they take all the organs out because they have to be weighed and stuff. He said they're either placed just back in the body cavity, he said, they'll just put them back in there, or they'll put them in a bag and put them back in there. He said, this don't seem to be the case. I said, what do you mean? He said, your brother has nothing. I said, huh? He said, your brother has nothing. He said, they stripped him from his throat down. He said, your brother has no organs.
They had also asked about Donald's tongue ring and why they weren't able to get that back. And then they asked if he even had a tongue, and the director just sat there with tears in his eyes and didn't answer.
The director did say, though, that Donald basically only had skin, bones, and hair. And the family said he was not an organ donor. And this just reminds me so much of the Kendrick Johnson case. He was a black teenager who died in 2013 under suspicious circumstances at school. And then an autopsy was done and his organs were removed and replaced with newspaper.
Yes, I was just thinking about that when you mentioned it. And one of the suspects was the son of an FBI agent. So it was a really sketchy case and a lot of similarities here.
Very much so. The family buried Donald that Sunday, and 3,500 people came to mourn with the family. And Danielle said that while the service was going on at the gravesite, 2 helicopters flew over and kind of hovered there for a bit.
Yes, very weird. And after the burial, Danielle and the family still have questions and are wondering why the police aren't being charged with this. She learns that there were 6 officers on the scene that night. Some were police and some were state troopers. All 6 were white. Donald's mother asked for them to at least be put on leave, but they weren't. One of the police officers who was there was the same one who told Donald that Sunday before he was killed that he was going to get him. Danielle calls the state trooper's office and they agree to have a meeting, but when she shows up, they say they can't meet with her and won't tell her why.
They tried talking to the DA and the DA wouldn't talk to them. They spoke to lawyers who initially took on the case but then decided not to work with them. Also, Donald's mama asked to see the cameras from that day and they were told that the cameras weren't working, you know, the police cameras.
They also worked briefly with an FBI agent who came to their home and talked to them for 5 hours. And this is one of the things he said.
He asked me, so what did your brother drive? I said, he drove a 98 Tahoe. I said, it had some rims on it. He said, ma'am, there you go. He said, these young guys out here driving these nice rides, he said, when these police see them, they don't know if it's mom's ride, they don't know if it's dad's ride, they don't know who it is, but the first thing that they do, they look at the color of their skin and the vehicle that they driving. He said, if they feel like that you ain't got the right color skin to be sitting in that vehicle, he said, what you think, nigga? I said, pull up.
After this visit from the FBI agent, they never heard from him again. Another thing we need to tell you before we conclude this episode is that the police didn't stop with killing Donald Davis. They began harassing the family just days after his death. I guess once you know you can get away with murder, you know you can get away with anything.
The first incident happened when the family was still receiving visitors at the house. Now, we do have to clarify that we don't directly know if an officer was for sure behind this incident, but a man came to their house and they thought maybe he was a friend of Donald's. He walked up to the family and said he had a message from one of the cops who was involved. He named the cop, but we will not name him since we don't know all the other cops' names. And the man said the officer said to tell them this.
That's just another N-I-G-G-E-R out the streets.
They kicked the man out of the house, and people in the community started to tell them to be careful. Then the helicopter incident happened at the funeral. Around this time, Danielle was working at a restaurant, and one of the cops came for about a week straight, and she would always have one of her co-workers to take his order after she heard his voice initially, because she just couldn't take his order after hearing his voice again.
Then, 2 weeks after Donald was killed, Danielle had a decal put on her car of her brother's picture. Her older brother was driving her car, and he saw a cop on the side of the road that had another vehicle stopped. And you know, when a car is, you know, on the side of the road, you're supposed to get over to the other lane or at least try to make a little room. Well, that's exactly what he does. He goes over the white line to make space for the cop on the other side, and then he gets pulled over.
And that might not be a big deal to you, but then 2 days after that, this same brother's house had gotten broken into. And somebody stole his wallet that had his license in it. So this particular day, he was driving Donald's truck, and one of the cops who was on the scene when Donald was killed starts following him. Donald's brother pulls into the DMV to go get a duplicate copy of his license since it had been stolen. The cop follows him in the building. As he's walking out, the cop asks the DMV employee what Donald's brother was doing in there, and they told him that he was there getting a duplicate copy of his license, but he couldn't get it since he didn't have his Social Security card with him. So then the cop gets in his car, follows the brother again, and pulls him over for driving without a license, handcuffs him, and then takes him to jail.
Someone tells Danielle about this, so she goes to the courthouse and later finds out that her brother had been put in a padded cell without anyone in there. And he was terrified because he started wondering what was about to happen to him, and, you know, he was freaking out. But they were able to, thankfully, get him released that day.
Shortly after this, Danielle starts getting pulled over every time she goes to Hamlet. She got 3 tickets in 2 weeks. Then the police stop her a 4th time, and this cop is also one of the ones involved in Donald's death, and they try to say that her nephew in the front seat didn't have on his seatbelt, but he did, and the cop told her that he was going to arrest her. Finally, someone at the courthouse who was in charge of taking payments for tickets told the family that this was harassment, and there is no way that she should have gotten that many tickets in just a 2-week span.
And one of the final acts Danielle told us about was a billboard she had made in honor of Donald Wayne. It said, "In loving memory of Donald Wade Davis," and had his picture and birthday and the day he was killed. They put it up, and someone stole it overnight. They got another one made soon after, and that one's still up today near the old Coca-Cola plant in town.
And y'all, we hate to do y'all like this, but that's it. There have been no other developments on this story, no arrests, not even an apology to the family.
And we do want to give y'all a little more context on Hamlet, though. We did a little research and found out that in 1975, there were some racially motivated protests in Hamlet after a black woman named Rhonda Scott was shot by a police officer. Apparently, Rhonda and some other women were waiting for some cabs, and an officer came by and asked her name. She wouldn't tell him, and when the cab came and she tried to get in, he grabbed her and started beating her with his slapjack. And then he dropped it, and she grabbed it, and then he hit her with his gun, and it went off.
Reports online say that the bullet grazed her, and the hospital report said that she just had a few scratches. But from the way the hospital acted with Donald Wayne's family, I don't know if I believe that necessarily. And the NAACP at the time said that she was brutally beaten and that the police and hospital were working to cover it up. But this incident made national news after the protests broke out. Also, in 1991, a devastating fire broke out at a chicken plant in Hamlet called the Imperial Plant, and 25 people, including 19 single mothers, were killed in that fire. A local black volunteer fire department offered to help the town's fire department, but they sent them away. 49 children became orphans that day, and prior to the fire, there were 3 other fires that happened in that building, and the plant never shut down to fix the issues, and the workers always smelled gas. But if they complained, they got in trouble, and they also got paid extremely low wages there. There was also no sprinkler system or fire alarm in the building.
So we say all of this to give you a bigger picture of Hamlet over the years. From 1975 with Rhonda Scott to 1991 with the Chicken Plant Fire, back to 2001 with Donald Davis. Everything in the past sets the stage for the future.
We want to leave y'all with a few messages from Danielle. She said that her brother used to call her every day and a lot of times in the middle of the night at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. He'd say, "What you doing up?" And she'd say, "Boy, I ain't up." She said that in the middle of the night, she still looks for those calls sometimes. When I asked Danielle what she would like to happen next, this is what she said.
I would love for my brother's story to get put out there so people can be made aware of police brutality and the racism that it still lives today. And I would love to just be able for an attorney to reach out to me and be like, "Okay, what do you want me to do, like you're asking me?" And I would love to be able to go in a court and each one of them have to tell what happened, but tell me why they done it. What was going through your mind for you to kill this young 20-year-old guy? For what reason? Why?
Right.
And them have to pay for what they done. Right. Whether it be jail time, you know, whatever. But for them to have to pay a penalty, because an average person like me or you, if we got out here and we killed somebody, we're going to jail.
Right.
You know, but just because they wear that badge, that doesn't make it okay for them to get out here and beat and kill people and harass people and stuff like that. They should have to pay for the things that they do, just like us people that don't wear badges.
If you can assist in any way, you can contact Danielle Davis directly, or you can contact her through the memorial Facebook page she set up for her brother called Missing Donald Wayne Chief Davis. Thank you for listening. Source materials and show notes can be found on our website, redjusticepodcast.com. You can follow us on social media at Red Justice Podcast. This is the Red Justice Project.
First time.